Hey, it's BK. Real quick before the show gets started, I want to let you know this is a simulcast with our other podcast called Low Bar Podcast. So you've probably heard of it through some ads that we've ran on this podcast before. But if you haven't, go check out Low Bar Podcast. You can find it on any podcast feed that you're on. You can find it on YouTube. It is a podcast in which John and I talk about a ton of different ways that you can make money or have a business online. Honestly, business is simple. People are lazy. We just want you to start. And that is why we had Valentina come on the show, and we're doing a simulcast on both feeds here so that you can hear from Valentina on why you might not start. What is it that is holding you back? Valentina is a mindset coach who works with dozens and dozens of our students at Dropship Breakthrough. She also works with friends of mine as well. She is a fantastic mindset coach, and so she's coming on today to talk about some of the reasons you're not starting, some of the reason you're afraid to start, some of the things that are holding you back. And so enjoy the show, and please go subscribe to the Low Bar Podcast. John and I put out a new episode every single week over there Monday mornings. We'd love to have you come join us. That's lowbarpod.com. Look us up on your favorite podcast feed. Go subscribe to us on YouTube. If you appreciate what John and I are doing for you, entertaining you, we'd love you to come support us over on that feed as well. Enjoy today's show with Valentina De Ferrari. You're watching this because you want to start a business, and I can feel the demons boiling up in me that were like, what if I can't do it? What if I fail? Well, we brought on a mindset coach today to talk you through those. Valentina, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here sharing a little bit as to what it is that I do and just giving some of my feedback here.
We've known each other a long time. I'm shocked you've never been on either one of our podcasts. Actually, we're doing the simulcast today. It's going on both of our shows. I'm shocked you've never been here. You've spoken at our event in 2023 in Minneapolis. You spoke last year right after having a baby at our event in Boulder, Colorado. You're a big part of this community. You work with a lot of people inside of our Dropship Breakthrough community, but you're even bigger than that. So I'm pumped to have you here.
Yeah, I'm super excited. It's been so fun. And every time I've gone to the events, I've met such amazing people and driven and motivated people. It's been really fun to watch and also to have the opportunity to work with a lot of them. It's been great.
I think I have to start with the most obvious question. What is a mindset coach, right? I think that could go so many different directions. I can hear some people already turning this off like, oh, here comes some woo stuff. I don't want to talk about that. How do you define a mindset coach? What even is it?
Okay, let me turn down the woo-woo knob down a little bit. No, just kidding. We can define this a little bit different depending on what we do. So I use hypnosis to help my clients with mindset, right? So when we're talking about mindset coaching, I'm trying to look at what is my mind doing when I am trying to start a business, when I am relating in my relationships, whatever it is that I do and what I'm doing to work, right? It doesn't have to specifically be in business. Is what is my mind doing? What is my internal being doing? So when I think about mindset, it's that. What is happening internally and how am I reacting to the situations that I'm in, if that makes sense.
I think it gets thrown around too much and in a woo-woo sense, right? That you're going to do some magical things. But for me, it comes down to, and look, I've listened to you explain it. I've listened to your mentor, Elliot. He's my coach as well. Try to explain this. It ends up bringing people down this rabbit hole of hypnosis, right? And they get kind of lost in the modality rather than what we're actually trying to do, right? And so let's clear that up real quick. You're not helping people quit smoking. You're not doing any of the hypnosis a lot of people hear about. You're simply doing like guided meditation. I personally have found this extremely valuable. I know a lot of our students have too, but what you're helping us deal with is this stuff that shows up for literally everyone. There is not someone who has started this journey who hasn't had the thoughts of, am I good enough? Am I smart enough? Am I worthy? What if I fail? What will my family think of me? Just all of the normal thoughts. And so I'd like to talk about that today because I'm sure there's people listening who have heard either our Dropship podcast and thought about starting an e-commerce store or some of these low bar podcasts. And they're like, I want to write some of these fiction books on Amazon, or I want to flip pallets like Shannon's doing, or any of the side hustles that we've talked about or ways to make money. And then they immediately go, am I capable of this? They feel scared in some way. And so I'd like to take it there. I do want to hear your story first, though. You were a registered nurse before you did this. Can you walk through your story? I know when I met you, you were a massage therapist and a nurse. Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. My passion for helping people started a really long time ago. I've had a meditation practice since I was very young. always been very curious about the mind and body. I'm originally from South America. I'm from Chile. When I was down there in my early 20s, I got certified to do holistic massage, right? So you're doing massage and energy work, really trying to tune into what the person's going through. When I moved back to the United States in my early 20s, after that, I decided to become a licensed massage therapist and started my own practice and have done that for over a decade now. During that time, my dad became very ill with acute myeloid leukemia. And I could say he inspired me to dig into the science part of understanding the body. Right. So I understood a little bit more of the physical body as in massage, the muscle. Right. And a little bit of as far as the energy goes. So I decided to go to nursing school, became a registered nurse, was in healthcare for 5 years. But there was always something missing. I knew my purpose in this world was to serve and to help people. This is what I'm here to do. And so after that, I was fortunate enough that Elliot Rowe, your coach, my mentor, helped me, and I got certified to be a hypnotherapist. And that's when it clicked, when all of these things came together, the physical body, right? The science, the energy, the mind, right? That was, I'm bringing the mind back in. And that's what I really loved, because I think that's the, I was dealing with now the human experience, which so many of us have a hard time putting words into that, right? It's just so many feelings. And so being able to now do the hypnosis is icing on the cake for me.
Did you do any before? Like I met you at some events. You were doing like massage at Elliot's events, right? Like we'd be able to get one massage during the event and in the back rooms or whatever. Awesome, by the way. Had you done any sessions? Had you experienced what, you know, in those rooms at Elliot's, there's a lot of people crying. There's some deep shit happening there, right? And then that same things happen on these calls, right? You're going back to some core stuff. Did you do any of that before you said, I want to do that?
Yeah. So I was fortunate enough to do a session with Elliot. I was going through a pretty bad breakup, and I had also experienced the loss of my grandma. So I was just suffocating in grief, to say the least. And I did a session with Elliot, and it was just so profound finding these patterns that I had, all the awareness that came, and how I could break free from that, right? So severe people pleaser, really low self-esteem, right? Daddy issues, right? My dad was, I was 6 years old, and my dad didn't give a shit about being involved in my life. So who knew that was gonna have that big of an impact in my life and the relationships that I was going to have. And I remember during the session, Elliot said something along the lines, have you realized that maybe you are in these relationships? Because I was dating the wrong people. And he says, maybe you're dating these people because you have the control of if you stay or not. You decide if you leave that relationship or not. And it was like, oh yeah, I'm dating people that have to depend on me, right? So then I decide I'm not with you anymore, right? You can't leave me. So it's kind of interesting after having that epiphany of like having to look at my own shit and say, yeah, you're right. You know, I am picking really bad people because that way I maintain control. Literally after that session, I think it was 5 months after, I met my husband. So there's that.
So you go on to get certified. Can you tell me what that even looks like? I'm curious. What is the process for, you know, being, look, there has to be some training that Elliot would like you to go through. I know Elliot does his own style, so I'm sure he has his own training as well. What does that look like to become a certified hypnotherapist? Or what is your title? Do you have a title?
Certified hypnotherapist. That is all right, my nice. Title. All right. Yeah. I did a program where the requirements to be certified, right? It's not like I'm just a hypnotherapist. I got certified through their program. And did over 200 hours of practical hours. From then, once I became certified, I started getting mentorship from Elliot, and I've been doing his process now. That's what I do now.
Yeah. Look, I wanted to start with something real simple. Probably real simple for you, Valentina, not probably so real simple in real life. So most of the people, or almost everybody who listens to this on whichever show it's on, there are going to be people who are probably Either I've just started a business or I want to start a business. Like I want to change something. It's essentially, I want to change something about my life. Maybe I want to do something that I'm more in control of or whatever it is, whatever the driving factor is. And I'm sure you've spoken to a lot of people who are either around that stage or thinking of making some change. It might even be a change within an existing business they're already running. You know, they need to make some big change or something like that. But they're scared, right? And they know they want to do it. They really want to do it. But for some reason, they just can't drag them. Like it kind of feels like, I mean, I've been through this. You really want to do something, but it kind of feels like you have to drag yourself towards it. You know what I mean? Like it feels really hard at the same time as really wanting something. I think that's a really disconcerting feeling. And I think it comes back to fear and all of that sort of thing. In my mind, it does. But like for people who are there, like what are they scared of? Like in your experience, where should people be looking?
Way back when I was thinking about starting a high-ticket dropshipping business, I was binging podcasts probably like you're doing right now. And the one thing I was looking for was someone to show me what one of these sites looks like. So John and I have done that for you. At dropshipbreakthrough.com/go, you can see a free training where John walks you through one of our businesses and shows you what the site looks like, what the process is for setting up one of these stores, and how you can take your next steps to setting up your own high-ticket dropshipping business. So head to dropshipbreakthrough.com/go and watch the free training.
Yeah. So first off, I want to normalize emotions, right? It's normal for us to experience something when we're stepping outside of our comfort zone. If you're going from an employee to wanting to start a business, right? It's going to bring up some emotion. And I want to normalize that it's okay. What it comes down to is what will you do with that emotion? What will you do, for example, with that fear? Will that fear paralyze you or will that fear be your driver? Will it push you forward? And I think that's the thing that's important to look at here is when I experience something, what is happening? Am I shutting down or can I push through that resistance, right? So you're asking me, what do people fear? Everybody comes from different backgrounds, different experiences. We have different programmings running. I do see some similarities that show up. So for example, let's talk about fear of failure, which I think it's huge, right? When we think about fear of failure, what goes into that? So fear of failure is I will have increased judgment. If I fail, I am judged. If I fail, I don't know, maybe I'm disappointing someone. If I fail, does this mean I'm not good enough, right? So it's challenging our self-worth. Then we can look at maybe fear of success. And one says, of course I want to be successful, right? The critical mind is like, of course I want to make $1 million. I want that, right? But what people don't understand is the underlying part of what comes with success. So maybe we are scared of success because it means it'll increase demand of my life. It'll increase responsibility. It'll increase visibility. And let me tell you, the visibility piece is a huge one for people. The visibility and the judgment. Oh, is this business good enough, right? People will only talk about their businesses when they're making enough money, right? Because it's like, I've made it, we're good, everything's good, right? But when you're in the trenches, people don't talk about it. Oh, I can't say I'm doing that. What will they say, right? And so I think that's one of the things that I see that show up a lot. And so what is happening here is that your nervous system, like at a nervous system level, growth equals danger. So then we kind of pull back. And this is where we start seeing self-sabotaging behaviors come up, right?
What do those behaviors look like?
Ooh, procrastination is a very big one. Hiding behind information, perfectionism, overdoing. Those things come up so much.
I think I still have all of those. Literally.
Though, it's normal. It's normal to feel that. Is what are you going to do with that, right? So when that resistance comes up, when that procrastination comes up, when you have the awareness to it, it's not an excuse anymore. And that's a lot of people are unaware of their patterns. And that's why doing the work kind of sucks. Because once you do the work, you have to look at the pattern and say, what do I do with this? Am I willing to deal with this procrastination or will I just keep it there? Is it going to be my avoidance, right? Doing tasks, doing things that are not really doing much for me when I have that big thing that needs to be taken care of today.
Hey, it's John here. I just wanted to let you know that the Low Bar Pod membership is now live. So if you've been loving the show and you'd love to hang out directly with myself and Ben and a whole bunch of other like-minded individuals to do more fun business stuff, head to lowbarpod.com/join. It's just $9 a month. It's cancel at any time. We can't wait to see you inside.
I know for me, early on, people would use words like, you need to do the work. And there's other phrases that often get repeated in any circle that you're in. And when you're an outsider to it, they're all saying it confidently. And like, we all know what those words mean. For sure, there's people listening who are like, okay, do what work exactly? I'm aware I'm scared shitless to start this business. I'm aware that I rearranged the pillows on the couch rather than sitting down and doing the research I need to do. I'm aware that the lawn needs to be mowed. I guess I'll go mow the lawn today instead of doing what I need to do. That's cool. What does doing the work actually look like? And how can someone do it without, you know, with or without hiring you, I think is a great question.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what's important here is a lot of us sometimes are not willing to see our blind spots. And that's why I think it's important to work with someone, because somebody can tell you, they're comforting themselves when they're telling you something, like making an excuse, right? And you can be the person to tell them, I see this in a different way, right? But doing the work means, are we regulated or are we not regulated? Am I functioning from alignment or not alignment? Am I expanded or contracted? So what do I mean by that? I'm trying to think of like the best way to explain this with not being too woo-woo on you, but doing the work pretty much just means dealing with the emotional part. So if there is resistance, how do we work that? Some people use breath work, right? Some people go to therapy. Some people are doing hypnosis, which is what I do, right? Where we're trying to go at the subconscious level, we're trying to rewire old thought patterns. So there are multiple things that you can do. Even if you're on your own, when you notice an emotion, what do you do with that emotion, right? And this is what I was saying. Do you buy into the fear and just consciously choose to go do the laundry or do the dishes, right? Or can you sit with that and say, okay, I am safe in this moment to do this? One of the reasons why I do recommend working with someone is because you can go deeper. And once again, you can't bypass, right? When you're working with someone, it's like you have to deal with that situation, if that makes sense. So that's kind of the way I would describe doing the work.
Look, I'm no expert at this, just someone who's done a lot of this. If I had to describe the work, it's specifically for what you do, it's like going and finding the core issue of why you're doing that, right? Why are you holding yourself back? Why are you not taking, as I believe Gay Hendricks says, taking the big leap? Why are you holding yourself back? And usually there's some like core emotion there. There's some core memory there. I've talked about a few on our podcast of going back and, you know, having someone ask me what I want to be when I grow up, and I don't even know my answer, but my grandma says, you'll never be that. We're Kanaganarfs. We're poor. And just like, yep, that totally happened. I don't remember that happening, but I remember that happening. And like that moment stunted me, right? That moment held me back from doing what I needed to do because I didn't believe I even could, right? And there's, I could probably go through 10 or more, probably 20 moments that Elliot has made me bawl my eyes out on a call before of just like going back to some of these memories. And I don't think I even had the tools in place to recognize that I was holding myself back, if I'm honest. I don't think I had the awareness. How does one gain the awareness?
Well, I think first off, what you're describing, that type of work is primarily in hypnosis, right? Where you're trying to trace back the emotion, the feeling to a specific memory, right? We're trying to get to the root cause of why is it that I procrastinate? Why do I have fear of failure, fear of success? And a lot of the time, it's from a childhood memory or a childhood experience. I think how we develop the awareness is, can we slow down and tune into our bodies? Our bodies are so wise, and you know that you're experiencing something uncomfortable, right? So if you close your eyes and you begin to tune into the body sensations when you know you have to do something, creating more visibility, more networking, and you're just like, oh my gosh, my chest feels heavy. I can't breathe. My stomach hurts. That energy is contracting, right? So you can become aware in the physical sensations. then you can develop that awareness through the patterns of, I need to do this, but I am choosing to do something else, right? What is the pattern that shows up? And you can write this stuff down too, right? When you need to call, I don't know, I'm going to say call suppliers, or I say that because a lot of people have a lot of fear of public speaking, fear of being seen or looking dumb when they call people. So that's why I'm bringing that up. But what does that feel like to you when you're about to make this phone call and you actively choose not to? So those are kind of how you can start to tune in to your behaviors. Obviously, if you can work with someone and you can express to them how things are showing up, I think that might be easier to gauge a little bit that awareness. And sometimes there are things that are in the deep, the subconscious mind. And we just need to unlock that, as you're mentioning, memories for you, right?
So we obviously talk to a lot of people who, and help and work with, a lot of people who are kind of, you know, once again, at the earlier stages of the business, entrepreneurial journey, whatever you want to call it. And they're kind of, you know, let's say they get past that initial hurdle of actually starting something and all of the, you know, all of the stuff that comes along with that mentally. And, you know, then they're going to start doing that thing. And at some point, that business is going to become something a little bigger, and it's going to force them to make further changes in their life, which is generally going to be that kind of switch from having a job and then making the jump into something that, you know, it's starting to look good, but it's probably still feels a little bit unknown. And they're at the same time, not only taking that kind of leap of uncertainty and belief, but I guess they're changing their identity as well. Like, I mean, that's kind of the point where that identity of, now I'm a founder or an entrepreneur, or I'm somebody else. I'm not going to be an employee anymore. So the majority of people that are listening to this, they probably have a job. And at some point soon, hopefully, they're going to have the choice. Do I want to stay? Everybody sees, when you're an employee, you see yourself as an employee. It's kind of almost like an identity, right? And I'm sure you've spoken to quite a few of our students at some point who have made that. I can think of a few of the people I know you've spoken to from our students who have made that move. And I'm kind of curious as to, like, how you see people shift their identity in that way, like going from seeing themselves as an employee to now they're basically in charge of everything. It's all on them. It's all their responsibility. I wouldn't say they don't have a boss anymore, because when you run a business, you just have lots of bosses, customers and all that sort of thing. But, you know, so they're going to lose things like external validation. They're not going to have a boss to please anymore as such. You know, they have to trust their own judgment, which you don't always have to do as an employee. And how do you, like, do people struggle with that shift? What do they struggle with? And what are some helpful ways they could think about that?
Yeah, so I think people have a hard time shifting into an authority role. I think that's one of the things that becomes extremely difficult. I do notice that in the early stages, right, mid stages, people still treat their businesses as if they were the employees. And there are a lot of trends that kind of still show up, the people pleasing. The reality is that when you become an entrepreneur, when you take on this role, you have to make tough calls. You have to talk to a lot of people. You have to hire, you have to fire, you have to do what's right for the business. And I see a lot of people pleasing, where the person that started this business is not standing in the authority to say, this is not working for my business. I am done with this, right? Can we shift? So I do see that people struggle with that authority, and they treat, for example, their new employees as, they're almost like scared. They're people pleasing, and I don't want to hurt their feelings if I say this, right? I don't know if you guys see that a lot.
Oh yeah. Now that you say these things, I see it. Sure.
So I do see that people pleasing shows up, and I don't want to hurt my employees' feelings, and I can't call this a supplier, right? Like, not trusting their own judgment, as you're saying, all of what you said, it does show up. And so I think it's realizing that when you choose to start a business, you do have to create that identity role, and you have to look out for your business and for its best interest, right? And so I do think that people have a hard time leaving that employee mindset and starting to embody what it's like to be an entrepreneur. Because it is hard. It is hard. There's a lot of decisions that need to be made. And sometimes people are scared. And I've seen businesses not fail, but a lot of bad things happen that don't need to happen because they couldn't take authority into making choices that needed to happen.
Quick ad. I take this stuff called KE4 from Ketone Aid. It tastes like rocket fuel, like actual rocket fuel. I'll show you. Yeah, it's brutal, but I'm in flow state 90 seconds later, whether I want to be or not. Pair it with Alpha GPC, and I get more done in 2 hours than I would in a normal day. I recently chatted with the founder, and he takes this product way more seriously than most supplement people. If you want to try KE4, go to ketoneaid.com/lowbar. They're giving our listeners free shipping if you go through that link. Just know, it tastes terrible, it isn't cheap, and it will make you uncomfortably productive. That's ketoneaid.com/lowbar. Maybe this is too simplistic, but can I narrow it down to when we're kids, we have mommy and daddy, right? And even heck, in your 30s and 40s, you still act funny and around your parents because you think you're this little kid and they're an adult. It takes a very long time for you to step out and be an adult, right? I feel like we see the same thing in business. Maybe that's not the shift to employee to founder, but that is like specifically in these e-commerce businesses, you have suppliers, we're retailing other brands, and people treat these other brands like their mom and dad, that they can't hurt their feelings. And then their employees, they kind of treat like their children, right? That they want them to love them rather than actually, you know, build a business for them. Is that a good way to describe what you're saying there? Is
100%.
Like we're indoctrinated into an industrialization, if you will. Like we're meant to have a job, whereas we sit in school all day and we're meant to please our teachers and we're meant to get good grades and we're not meant to be in control. And so like most people aren't ready for that transition.
Yeah. And it's a scary shift because all the responsibility and once again those decisions are on you. But yeah, what you're describing is exactly it. I think it's hard to break a pattern that you've grown up living always, right? I'm sure you guys have heard this, that we don't really train people to be entrepreneurs. We train people to be employees, right? And so you do have to kind of change that cap and just make the decision of, if I embody an entrepreneur, what does that look like? And I think that's also really important, is getting clarity on what does that even look like for me, right? What type of business owner do you want to be? And I think, I don't know, I think a lot of people think that, I mean, let's talk about e-commerce, getting into e-commerce because it's get rich quick. That's not it. You have to put a lot of work and you have to do a lot of things, right? And so you have to kind of embody, what is it really like starting a business? Who do I want to be as an entrepreneur? I think it's important.
Yeah, I think it even goes back to like, it's not only that we don't train people or teach people to be entrepreneurs, we just don't teach people, like in the normal average experience of life, we don't teach people to be leaders. When you're an entrepreneur, you're in a leadership position. And I think people with a small business don't think they're a leader because they're not leading anyone else, really. Maybe it's like one or two people. And the thought of a leader for most people and the way they were brought up is, oh, like the president's a leader. Maybe not the current one. But like, sorry, I can't resist that. But like you must be leading a big group of people to be a leader, right? And we don't teach kids how to be a leader. Like, who taught their kids how to be a leader, like specifically, or where do you learn that in school? Obviously you don't. So I think that's a huge thing I try to encourage people. When you're starting a business, you're saying, I want to be a leader. And so you have to, that's your identity. You have to like kind of find a way to connect with that and learn more about that, because that's its own special thing that you can learn how to be a leader. It's not like some people maybe have a natural leaning towards that, but it's a skill. Leadership's a skill, right? And you can pick up a lot of it. But I wonder if a lot of that shift from employee to leader or entrepreneur or whatever, does that also, I mean, completely what Ben was talking about, but does that also tie back to as well the same sort of fears that people struggle with when it comes to actually starting the business? Because essentially at that point, like, I suppose the safety net's ripped away and the comfort's ripped away, right? Let's be real. Like, for a lot of people, a job is comfort. And it's like, it's safe, it's comfort. And so if you take that away, like if people haven't dealt with things like fear of failure and all of that sort of thing, is that still going to hold them back from making that change or making that identity shift, I suppose?
All right, let's be real for a second. You've thought about starting a business, maybe you've even tried dropshipping, and it's probably felt like you're just throwing stuff against the wall to see what sticks, right? You're dropshipping some cheap junk from a sketchy website, praying it gets there, and then you're making 12 cents on the dollar. It's a grind. What if there was a different way? A playbook, a blueprint. What if you could skip all the nonsense and build a real business selling high-ticket stuff, I'm talking products over $1,000, from trusted suppliers? Look, John and I distilled 21 years of e-commerce experience into 6 simple checklists. It's the battle-tested blueprint that over 1,000 students have used to launch in 30 days. No more guessing, no more costly mistakes. We're giving you all 6 checklists, plus a video walkthrough for each one for just $9. That's a no-brainer. Go to dropshipbreakthrough.com/checklist to get the ultimate high-ticket dropshipping checklist bundle and stop doing things the hard way. That's dropshipbreakthrough, spelled thru.com/checklist.
I think there's all of the things that you mentioned could quite likely show up, because there are all of those things where we're going back to having to trust your own judgment. And a lot of people struggle with self-esteem. And I think the self-esteem is kind of the root cause to all of that, mm-hmm. the fear of failure, the fear of success, a lot of those things, right? And so I think once you become an entrepreneur, it's everything gets stripped away and it's just you, yourself, and I, and that self-esteem. And what do you do with that, right? And so I do think it connects back to a lot of the things that you're mentioning, to our childhood, right?
I think it's true. I think where I was trying to drive with that is, I think a lot of people assume that, you know, if they get over those early hurdles without dealing with any of the jumble of shit that's going on in their head, that it's not going to keep recurring. Like, oh, I've crossed the hurdle, I'm over it. You know what I mean? I'm just going to romp on. And I think it keeps coming up, obviously, because I think what people miss in the beginning is your business just keeps going through hurdles and hurdles and hurdles. Like I always say to people, like, it's a whole bunch of work getting to $1 million in sales a year, but then to go from 1 million to 3 million in sales a year, you're going to get to $3 million a year in sales. You're going to have another set of hurdles. Mm-hmm. You'll cross them and that'll get you up to 8 or 9 or $10 million a year in sales. And then you're going to have some really big hurdles, and they actually get bigger, those hurdles, and the shifts and the changes that you need to push, and all of those things just keep coming up again. So I think if you have but they just get bigger.
I do agree. And I think that's why it's important to work with someone on that, because sometimes people want to work with me and they say, so how long is this going to take? How many sessions? And I'm like, well, that's not how this work goes. If not, we would all be Buddhas by now, right? It's life. It's those triggers are going to always be there. It's how, as we do the work, right? For me, as I use hypnosis, we decrease the intensity. We're able to, I guess, recover. Let me just use that word. We're able to recover quicker. We're able to regulate our nervous system with all that uncertainty. So when things are happening in the business, whether you're going from, you know, I just made $5,000 to millions, right? All of these things that are going to happen in through that phase, right? Can we regulate? So with that uncertainty, we're not emotionally hijacked. And I think that's what's important, is can I calm down, can I regulate, so then I'm not frantic doing things in a different, not thinking straight, right? So do problems go away? No, they don't go away, but how we react to them, they do. How we react to something, we can begin to change that. But once again, things are always going to come up and triggers are going to come up, but can we be better with those triggers than I was yesterday?
In my experience, it never ends, right? I really struggled early on, if I'm honest. I pushed through a lot of it. It was a more like chip on my shoulder stuff of I'll prove all this stuff wrong. And then it was like, I actually need to go address that and work through that stuff. And my career accelerated because of that. But I would say you continue to hit these plateaus as you go along, right? I still procrastinate. I still wonder if I'm doing enough. I still wonder if I'm good enough. I still wonder, am I reaching anywhere near my true potential? And will I lay on my deathbed and wonder, why didn't I give it all, right? I think I struggle with all, and I've been in the game 11 years, right? And John will tell you, I'm definitely more of the wife in this marriage that we have here. I'm more of the emotional one. I'm working through this stuff, but it shows up for me every single day. And so
that doesn't, I don't know, saying that out loud probably makes one out of 10 people feel better who's listening to this. And the other nine are going, well, fuck, if it's going to keep being there, why would I even start, right? So what do you tell those beginners who are 100% feeling this? There's for sure someone listening to this right now who wants to do something and they just haven't been able to kick themselves in the ass hard enough to like take the action. Like, what do you tell those people? Because you can't just say it never goes away, and then because then they'll feel defeated, right? You can't say it gets better and they just have to trust you. They're not going to trust you either, right? They want to feel something. How do you make them feel something other than my only advice would be like, go take action and you'll feel momentum, and that might make you change.
What's your why? Why do we do what we do? I think, once again, it's important to remember why do you want this? Are you wanting freedom, right? So what is it? What is the outcome that you're wanting to achieve, right? And it's hard because we do have to push past that resistance. But when you push past that resistance, you set yourself free. That's where you get to the freedom. Yes, it's work, and it is true. I could just say, just be an employee forever. If you want to do that, you want to be comfortable, that's fine. You can also do that. You don't have to do the work. You don't have to better yourself if you don't want to. But that's a personal choice. What is your why? What is the outcome that you want? Do you want more freedom? Do you want more time with your family? What does that look like, right? And then is that a big enough driver for you to make the leap? I don't know. That's something that you have to really dig in and see if it's enough for you. You know, because I know plenty of people who are totally fine with working a 9-to-5. They don't want to manage people. They don't want to do more. And that's okay.
For me, that came from pain. So you've worked with a lot of people. How many people are pushing away from pain rather than pulling themselves towards the why? A genuine question. I know I was really like, fuck this place. I'm going to show all these people wrong. I'm going to show, for me, it was like teachers and my dad and whoever else. I was going to show all them wrong that I am capable of doing what I feel inside I'm capable of. And I'm sure there's other people who are like, I have this grand vision of how I want to change the world. And that's pulling them forward rather than pushing away. Is that a 50-50 split in your experience? Or are most people running away from pain, or are a lot of people being pulled early on?
I think it depends on the programming. I think it depends a lot on the upbringing and what their experiences have been like. So it depends, but I do see both. And for me, it's kind of finding the right way to channel that energy. If we're pushing through, as what you're mentioning, right? It's kind of, I need to prove people wrong, right? That will get you somewhere. But I wonder if we can also shift that energy into energy that maybe is more productive. Right. So it feels productive, but sometimes is not acting. I don't know if I'm making sense of how I'm trying to describe that. As far as the energy being productive, sometimes people work a lot through, I'm so angry and I feel like this is going to take me to where I need to be. And I'm like, yes, but I feel like we can channel that energy in a different way and make it more productive. So it depends. It really depends on the upbringing, the experiences that people have had, but I would have to talk to you more in depth to know that.
Yeah, and I've left a lot of that behind, right? And like I said, a lot of stuff still shows up for me, but it's not coming from a place of pain anymore.
Sure.
And I would say the pain felt like dirty fuel. Like it was good. Like I was going to go hard. I could burn a lot of midnight oil, but it was dirty fuel. And now it's like the being pulled towards something greater. Honestly, having kids will do this to you as well. You know, having a different set of whys, a different purpose. It feels like a cleaner burning fuel. It feels more genuine rather than, you know, like a chip on your shoulder, I guess. I don't know how else to explain it. I see John rolling his eyes. This isn't good.
I love the dirty fuel analogy because I think that's exactly it. So I, as I mentioned, I have both.
I love the dirty fuel. Dirty fuel's great. You go faster on dirty fuel, man. Hey, John here for just a sec. You know how we're always breaking down these wild business ideas and road testing opportunities that other podcasts won't touch? Well, we're growing our own business here, this podcast, and we need your help. So here's the deal. If the Low Bar podcast has given you that holy shit, I can actually do this moment, or just made your commute less boring, help us out. If you're watching on YouTube, go and hit that subscribe button. If you're listening on Spotify, go to our profile page on Spotify and smash that 5-star button. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, hit the review button and leave us a review. It takes you just 30 seconds, costs you nothing, but helps us reach more people who think starting a business is rocket science. which it's not. And it will also give us the momentum we need to do even more fun and crazy business stuff right here for your entertainment. We love to keep it real with you. Now keep it real with us. Let's grow this thing together. People always ask me, because I'm kind of the opposite of Ben, as you probably picked up, as you said. He's the wife, I'm the not wife, whatever that means. You know, I've been doing this for 12 years as well. And people are always like, oh, how do you keep doing it? And, you know, you talk about all these challenges you've gone through and all that sort of thing. Like, what's the thing that you're using to pull yourself forward on that? And I'm like, well, I just, you know, all of those fears you started with, I just keep replacing them with new fears. And that's what drives me forward. There's no grand why for me. It's just like the pain of going back that way is so great and I'm so terrified of it that I just keep going forwards or keep trying to avoid that pain. And I just...
But so it seems like that fear, once again, as I was mentioning earlier, is it a driver or does it paralyze you? And it seems like from what you're describing, you are continuing to push through. And I think that's very important because a lot of people, we're paralyzed most of the time. When fear kicks in, we're paralyzed. And it's, once again, it's easier to be an employee than to be an entrepreneur. If not, everybody would be an entrepreneur.
Absolutely. And entrepreneurship is definitely not for everybody, for sure. I think you have to find out if you're wondering, for sure. But yeah, it's definitely never going to be for everybody. Yeah. No, I don't think it paralyzes me.
No, I clearly doesn't, as you're mentioning.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, just,
people always ask these questions like, well, what is the mindset things and what is the this and how do you do that? And I can never put it into words. Like I always want to, and then I can just never put it into words.
I think it's time to sign John up with Valentina after this call, folks. There's a poll down below. So say yes if you want John to sign up. Say no. Look. We love you. I love Elliot. He's priced out most of the market at this point. Good for him. You're in a far more palatable price range. But some people don't even want to spend that, right? And so how do they find someone like you? If someone's looking to, Elliot put it this way, if you don't know what to do in your business or what your first step is, go get a business coach, right? That's where John and I come in, and there's many other people just like us who can help you get started. We have a whole community, the Low Bar community. We have Dropship Breakthrough. We have all sorts of avenues for us to help you when you don't know what to do. But when you do know what to do and you're not doing it, that's when you need a mindset coach, right? And so if the people certainly, maybe they're not in a position to hire Elliot. I don't know many people who are at this point. That's great. They're not in a position to hire you. Maybe you're not local to them. Maybe your time zone doesn't work for you. How do they find someone like you?
Yeah. I mean, I'd be happy to to share some coaches that I'm also friends with. But that's a tough one because I do believe that you have to shop around. The best advice I could give when you're looking for someone is find someone that makes you feel safe, right? Find someone that brings this environment to you where you can actually experience change. For some people, hypnosis is not what they're looking for. There are some people that are very analytical and they're like, I just don't want to do that. I don't want to visualize. I don't want to do that type of work. And that's okay, right? There are multiple avenues people can seek out. Breath work is amazing if you don't want to talk and you want to just experience letting go of something. That is beautiful, right? Hypnosis, obviously I love hypnosis, but being able to reprogram, establish new neural pathways. There is regular talk therapy. That's also great. You just have to find who you resonate with and who you feel safe that you can share these things with. So that's the best advice I could give with as far as that goes.
John and I are both big fans of the nuclear option as well. Is that something you ever condone? Just like biting the bullet, going hopefully with somebody helping you take, mushrooms or something of that stature. Are you someone who believes in that? Like, for me, it has been immensely helpful at resolving some things. And certainly there needs to be the right dose at the right place of clean things and just setting and all of the good things, right? Like, but is that something you condone or do you call it the nuclear option as well?
I think there is a wonderful place for medicinal therapies. As far as psilocybin goes, I think it's great. Once again, it's not for everybody. Some people don't want to take their minds to that place, and that's also okay. You can find other ways, but you just have to tune in to what feels okay for you. But I think it's great. I think it's a good avenue.
You just described why I like it, right? So often I've had people say, what is it about it? How would you describe it? And so I have them do this. I'm like, all right, really close your eyes or keep them open. I don't care. Think about that one thing that you very rarely allow yourself to think about because it hurts so bad inside. You'll only let yourself be there for about a split second, and then you're like, okay, we're done thinking about that. It hurts too much. When you take these, you're going to stare at that for the next 2 hours rather than the next 0.2 seconds. And like, I think that's what people need. I think the world would be a better place if this was more like a thing that was part of, I don't know. I certainly have some wild views here. I know John and I both took it much more when we were younger for other reasons, or, you know, trying to have, I think he did have fun. I definitely didn't have fun. I had some bad experiences back then, but like, you know, as an adult, it has hit me in a much different way, and it's been extremely powerful. And so I don't know. I was curious your thoughts on that. I hope it does become something that is more mainstream.
I don't think everybody is ready or feel ready to take their mind to that place. Because as you're mentioning, we grow up with trying to get away from pain. That's all we're doing. We're turning on survival mechanisms left and right. This is why we procrastinate. This is why we avoid, right? This is why all of these self-sabotaging behaviors come up. We're trying to protect from that pain. And so I feel like if you're going for doing something like that, you have to be very open to the door you're about to step through and say, all right, I'm going in. You know, that's a personal choice. And once again, I don't think everybody is ready for that.
I actually want to hear John's thoughts here. John, what's your take on this?
I have a much less structured approach to said things. I completely agree. Absolutely not for everybody. Definitely not for people with pre-existing mental health diagnoses and all of that sort of stuff. Consult your doctor, blah, blah, blah. Well, don't consult a doctor, really. I'm joking about that. But like I don't know. Yeah, obviously, I am a big fan of such things. Very much not for the structured approach that people take them under now. I think that misses the point. And it builds something up that doesn't need to be built up, really. Like, it doesn't. Like, it will always be what you have in your head about it when you go and do it, right? So I grew up doing these things like regularly, and all of the ones you can name, been there many times. And like, but nobody told me beforehand, oh, you've got to be ready that you're going to look at yourself and blah, blah, blah. And guess what? I never did. That's never been my experience, not once, in hundreds and hundreds of times. And so I just like, I do find it amusing that like all of a sudden it's all the rage when people have known exactly the benefits of doing it forever. I mean, I know that there's got to be the structure and everything to make it legal in places, right? I get that. You know, I get that completely. And so I'm not trying to shit on that, but
I think what is missed there is a lot of the integration, because I from what you're describing, John, I feel like, you know, back in the day, you do a lot of things with just doing them. Right. I feel like now is important, the integration part, as same as ketamine is something that's very used now for depression. Right. But what are we doing to help people integrate whatever emotion it is that they're processing? I think it depends, you know, if you're on psychedelics, what type of dose you're taking. I mean, I'm not a psychedelic therapist. I think there are a lot of different dosing that can happen. I have gotten to a point where I did not know my name. I have questioned who I was before. So that, you know, I don't know if that's for everybody sometimes. But with that being said, the process, I feel like, for making it legal, and I think as far as therapeutically goes, there needs to be an integration process to it. Because once again, I feel like, yes, I could take something at my house on my own, right? But what's the interpretation of the information I am gathering, right? And this is what I'm talking about with hiring a coach to see what your blind spots are, right? Sometimes we're not seeing the information that's really there.
But I do agree with you, John.
No, I'm like, I get the rules and the guardrails around it these days. And I'm happy that they're there, because now universities can research this stuff. And I think it was absolutely terrible that the US stopped universities researching it back in the 70s or whenever that was, because we'd be so much further ahead if the research had continued, you know, back at that time, you know, from the 50s and so on. So I think I get it. I completely get it. And I think it's important that now people can do it more freely and openly. And that's with those guardrails in place.
I think what's great is if people can combine multiple modalities, right? Can you do breath work? Can you do hypnosis? Can you do meditation? I'm a firm believer in meditation. I have a huge meditation practice. And so it's not, it has to be one thing, right? Incorporate all the things, get the knowledge, get the experience, right? That's what we're talking about. What's the work? That's the work. It's an, all these experiences of, can I release somatically? Can I change some? Can I create neuroplasticity through hypnosis by reframing thoughts, right? The world's your oyster.
I want to come back to me, just a slight change of tack, that you said before we started recording. It's bugging the back of, it's scratching in the back of my head. And so I have to ask, we were talking about like your business side of things, and you're a coach, obviously, you work with a lot of people. I assume you were mentioning that you have to, like, you're also a mom and all of that sort of thing as well. And so you have to have some, I guess, limits on how much work you do, because there is an emotional element, obviously, to what you're discussing with people, and that puts some weight on you as well as, you know, obviously them, or maybe it releases weight from them and puts it onto you, I don't know. And you brought up this, I can't remember the exact terminology you used, but like this idea of, like, you've got like only so much emotional energy that you can give up every week or every day or whatever. And it's, you sounded like you had a really good handle on where that lies for you. And I don't think, like, emotional, once again, like, I even struggle to talk about this because we talk about emotions so infrequently in the business space. Like, it's all very strategy, tactics. Even when we're talking about mindset stuff often, like, emotion is not generally a term I use to describe, like, me as somebody who doesn't have any actual real training or experience with helping people deal with those things. But it's an interesting concept to me, because it sounds to me like, you know, you like everything we do, we're expending some of our, where there's emotion in it, right? Our brain has emotion and logic, you know, and those are always, you know, working together to help us make decisions and do all of that sort of stuff. And I've never really heard somebody say, like, I don't know if limit's the right word, but like, I've put some restrictions on myself based on how much emotional capacity I feel I have. I haven't heard somebody say that before in those words. And so I'd love you, if you could talk about that some more, and maybe like, how might people think about that for themselves, even if they don't work with, you know, clients like you do in that sort of sense. But even when, I assume when you're running your business on a day-to-day basis, and there's challenges, there's ups, there's downs, you feel things. Like, you really feel things. You know, you talk to a customer and they're terrible, and they tell you you're terrible, and all of that. You know, like, there can be really good things, really big highs, you know, and all that sort of stuff, and really, really big lows some days. And should people be more aware of, like, where their emotional capacities are? And is it important to find a way to kind of manage not exhausting yourself? Or is that just a level of depth that's too overboard for most people?
No, I think motherhood has brought to light a lot of these things, right? And because I am a person that I want to be of service and I want to be present, I can tell what starts to happen for me internally when I am doing too much, when I am giving too much. Just because I do want to serve others and help others doesn't mean I have to completely drain every part of my being to fulfill someone else's, you know, fill someone else's cup, right? I have a husband. I have a almost 1-year-old. That in itself requires a lot of emotional capacity and presence. And for me, I've always lived my life of, I want to be present, and presence requires a lot of emotional capacity, right? I have to be emotionally recharged in order to be present. And as far as clients go, right, even whether we're talking business, whether it is something that they want to share about strategy or emotional pieces, it can be draining, right? I am constantly trying to problem solve and think of solutions and provide the feedback of what I really see in this person, because a lot of people don't believe in what they're doing. And I see what they don't see what I see. And so I'm trying my hardest to be like, let's go, you can do this, right? And it does require a lot of emotional presence to be there with my clients, to be there with my child, to be there with my husband. And so self-care, I know how many clients I can take in one day. Some people have a bigger tolerance for that. I have a smaller one, or maybe it's small. I don't know. Is it big? I'm not exactly sure. For me, that's where I'm at, right? More than 4 clients a day seems extremely exhausting if I also have to show up for my family later in the day. It's a lot.
I think the average person listens to this probably does have a family, right? Most of the people we talk to, they'll be in their 30s or maybe 40s, early 40s or something like that, and they've got kids. And I think for me, that's having a family makes business much harder than it would be if you were single, for sure. Much more challenging in a number of ways. But I think it also gives you some really good ways to recognize when you're pushing yourself too hard as well. Like if you can be aware of what you're like around your kids or your partner, wife, husband, whatever, like you'll notice like when you're pushing yourself too hard at work, because that it always flows over into your personal life, right? Like you're not,
absolutely,
you can't be present with your kids, you know, or you're really short, snappy, dismissive, all of that sort of stuff. I think that's a sign that you've exhausted your emotions and you don't have enough left in the tank to actually, you know, operate as a human outside of that and meet at least, you know, you have to meet people's needs to a certain extent, of course. And I think that's obviously like it's really easy to get into that. Like when your business is addictive as hell. For a lot of people, it can become like, and I'm speaking from personal experience, like it becomes like an addiction. Do you know what I mean? Because there's a lot of dopamine involved. There's a lot of reward, even small, large, like whatever. And so I think that all leads to a bad place if you let it go on. And so I think, you know, being really at least mindful of like where your emotional capacity is at the end of every day is important. And like acting on that, if you feel like it's getting a bit stretched, I think you have to pull back. But I like that you talked about that, because I don't think anybody really talks about that.
I love what you just said, though, of how are you showing up for your children, your wife? What is your mood like, right? I want to be present. I want to have and enjoy my family dinners, putting my baby to sleep and not just thinking about all of these other things or just emotionally exhausted, right? But depending on the industry, you know, you have to gauge what that looks like for you. But yeah, keep an eye on that emotional capacity. How much am I willing to take on, and where am I willing to set boundaries? I think boundaries are really important, mostly when business becomes addicting. People really like schedule that in. This is my meditation time. This is my family time. Block that off your calendar and respect those times, right? Because that also allows you to enter a state of flow more easily, right? Because if not, we're just running into burnout. That what you're describing is burnout. When you're not present, when you're in a bad mood, when you sleep like shit, right? You're just in burnout.
Well, we love having you on. Where can someone listening to this go follow you? Is there a place you like to post a lot?
Yeah, so I decided to start a private account to protect my baby's identity and stuff, but I am at the Rewired Mind Hypnosis.
On Instagram, or was there a preferred platform?
On Instagram, and then I'm in the works of business development over here, but you have one of my links if people want to come my way. You can send them there. If not, they can find me on Instagram as well.
Well, we literally have dozens and dozens at this point of people who have worked with you or are currently working with you. I cannot recommend her enough. Certainly, I've worked with her mentor. I can't recommend this modality enough. So there'll be a link down below if you think you're a good fit for Valentina. There'll be a link down low to follow her. And I'm kind of putting you on the spot here. We did not discuss this, so feel free to tell me no. But you've been to 3 of our events. You've spoke at 3 of our events. All 3 of them, you did a meditation. There are a couple that really stand out to me that people were like, wow. I went somewhere amazing here, right? I'm thinking back to Salt Lake City and I'm thinking to Boulder. Those 2 stand out to me. Would you be willing to record those, you know, just you and a microphone, and we could put them into our low bar community?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. No problem. I would love to share the love. Anything that helps people get unstuck and to help them even just move forward a little bit, I'm all for it.
I just want people to see the power of this. And I think, like I said, at that event, multiple people, both of those events, people pulled me aside and they were like, wow, did you hear that? And we didn't, right? John and I were out in the hallway trying to figure out what we were going to do, you know, some scrambling something, putting on an event sucks. And so we didn't get a chance to sit in there and actually do this exercise with you, but we heard from so many people that it would be really cool. So you can go to lowbar.com. There'll be a big button on the screen. Come join our community. We'll put those in there for free if you're inside of our community. I'm going to make sure I stay on top of you to get that done. And hopefully they'll be in there by the time this podcast comes out. So thanks for coming on, Valentina.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
John and I both love business, think about it all the time, can't turn it off, and don't know why anyone would want to. And because of that, we started a second podcast where we can talk about everything we've ever wanted to talk about in business, not just dropshipping. We like talking about all things business. So if you want to hear John and I talk about all sorts of stuff, from camel meat dropshipping businesses to PDF dropshipping to a guy gambling $100 every single day on YouTube Shorts, to how OnlyFans taught us lessons in business. We're all over the place over there, but it's a really fun podcast. So if you're a podcast listener, you love John and I, head over to your podcast player of choice and look for the Low Bar Podcast. You'll see a blue image and you'll see a cartoon version of John and myself. And go back and start at episode one. I promise you will not regret this. This is one of the more fun projects that I have done recently. I know John's having fun too, so we'd love it if you joined us. Check out the Low Bar Podcast on YouTube or wherever you prefer to listen to podcasts.